Weekly English Medium discussion. We have already appointed Sutta, Mahavyuha Sutta. Before going to that traditional topic, if someone is having any reports or any remarks, we can take few minutes before starting the formal discussion. Sukhi hontu. Sādhu sādhu anumodāmi anumodī tabbaṁ khamāmi khamitabbaṁ supat vittā. Okay, it seems there is no any...
Avasarai Bhante?
Yes.
Yeah, we have received a report, fairly a lengthy report, like, and it's from one Mehenin Mahanse, if I'm not mistaken.
I can't understand. Please repeat the message.
Yeah, we have received one report, Bhante.
Yeah.
And it's a fairly lengthy report, and it's from one Mehenin Mahanse, if I'm not mistaken. Shall I proceed?
Dhammanishita. What is the name?
No, sir. Name, Swami Nansa, Pasada.
Pasada.
Yeah.
Is she in the audience now?
I cannot see Bhante.
Then no use. Because again I have to ask this question from the different audience and again I have to answer. That means she do not know. Okay. Today we are going to take it into the discussion. Therefore we may be talking. But the particular person is not there. If she appears on the discussion, I will give you a... Please remind me, in the midst of the discussion,
yes,
I'll give a chance. Otherwise, keep it in an alert box.
Okay, Bhante.
So that we can start the Mahavyuha Sutta. Yes, please.
So we're coming to the end of this sutta. And I'm going to read from... It's 9:11 in my section here. Having comprehended, a Brahman does not take up mental constructs. He is not a pursuer of views nor a kinsman of knowledge. Having known the commonplace opinions, he maintains equanimity while the others grasp. Having loosened the knots here in the world, the Muni does not take sides in arisen disputes. He is peaceful amongst the restless, equanimous, without grasping, while others grasp. Having abandoned past influxes, not creating new ones, he does not go along with desire, nor is he a dogmatist. Released from speculative views, the wise person free of self-reproach is not tainted by the world. He is remote from all phenomena, from whatever is seen, heard, or sensed. With his burden dropped, released, the Muni, not given to mental construction, does not desire, does not yearn. So said the Blessed One. So in reaching the conclusion to this sutta, so again, the situation is that the Buddha is answering questions that are being posed to him by a replica Buddha. And so this replica Buddha is helping the Buddha to achieve very deep questions, answering questions that will be of interest to a community of devas who are listening in, and answering very subtle questions that will be of interest to their mind, because these are beings who have... they enjoy great opportunity, great talent, great wealth, and are not very interested in coarse things in life. So they want to know answers to questions about the Dhamma that are subtle and will interest their pique their interest in the Dhamma and be the impetus to be the the reason why they would move forward to strive in the Dhamma. So at this stage, the Buddha is trying to present the benefits of the practice and what it's like to be enlightened. What are the characteristics of somebody who is enlightenment? So he's speaking about this not in a way to booster up what it is to be an arahant, like, oh, it's really great, but to really get down to what are the essential aspects of his own life, his own perspective on the world, and how he has come to peace. So here, having comprehended, he does not take up mental constructs. So here he understands the essence of suffering itself. So he doesn't need to, you know, fabricate or tell himself stories about the way the world is. He knows the nature of the world, that it is suffering at its heart, and he doesn't need to, like I said, tell himself little stories. He is not pursuer of views, nor a kinsman of knowledge. So here this pursuer of views is, again, where you don't know the truth, so you have a view about it. You have an opinion. You don't have news. You have an opinion. You don't have news. You have some entertaining story or like just fabrication about the news. If you have news, you have the facts. You have a deep insight into the way the world is. But if you're a pursuer of views, you substitute facts and reality, or the reality ultimately being that the nature of the world is suffering. You substitute it with a fabricated story. Here in this section, nor a kinsman of knowledge, is the commentators say that this is that you're not striving for sort of superpowers. You're not striving for. Like, you're not particularly intrigued by knowing about past lives or the lives of other beings in other realms. Like, this information isn't the essential information that's getting you out of this rebirth and suffering itself. This is just knowing about other people's business. You're not intimate with your own business. So here again, he doesn't promote this kind of knowledge, even though it is in many ways a great blessing and a great benefit, you could say, personally. But here again, the Buddha doesn't recommend it. Having known the commonplace opinions, he remains equanimous while others grasp. So again, the essence of equanimity is that we know the way the world is, and we stand aside. We don't try to. We're not swayed by the way the world is. So we have an equanimity. Upeka, the word for equanimity, means to look on. So to look on, to have a clear-eyed view of the nature of suffering, to not be grieved by the way the world is on the one hand, or not numb to the way the world is on the other hand. But to have this presence between numbing and between grieving of a clear-eyed view is a great eye to the eye of wisdom. So having loosened the knot here in this world, the Muni does not take sides in arisen disputes. So again, he's referring back to this quality of equanimity, to not take sides, to not get involved in disputes. So this doesn't mean that one is not cognizant of disputes, or but one sees where one can be useful and maybe has information or knowledge to share with people or guidance, but on the other hand is not involved, meaning upset or sort of deluded about that, into thinking that I can change what can't be changed. So this comes back to a sense of agency that one one can only really change oneself, and one's focus is on that. One is just focused on what's within one's power. He is peaceful amongst the restless, equanimous without grasping, while others grasp. So here the essence again is that second noble truth of grasping, tanha. Tanha is the basis of suffering itself. So he is equanimous when others are restless. So normally when one is meditating, one encounters these hindrances, and restlessness is after you've settled lust or aversion, then you come to restlessness. So it's a more subtle defilement. So here a person has already settled, we'll say, gross defilements, but they've run into finer and finer defilements. However, the Muni is equanimous. This is like the ultimate mental state for anyone who is a mature practitioner. So one is equanimous without grasping, while others grasp. So you have that insight at a subtler and subtler level of to not grasp, or to not the subtler kind of aspects of tanha. Having abandoned past influxes, not creating new ones. So here again, the influxes are these kalisa. So kalisa are, where you go from maybe subtle defilements to even more subtle defilements. Instead, you've abandoned these subtle defilement tendencies.
Okay.
So having abandoned past influences, not creating new ones. So you let go of these past these defilements, like these habits that we have, you don't replace those old unskillful habits with new unskillful habits. He does not go along with desire. He is not a dog, nor is he a dogmatist. So again, this is kind of this. This aspect of there are different, many, many kinds of desire. So, for instance, you get yourself into a good position in the world, and you don't become like superior about your good position. You don't become a dogmatist. You don't go around telling other people, I'm better than you in a subtle way. Or you're not trying to turn it into like a religion or into a leadership in some ways where you're dogmatic, you're over sure of your you become righteous, or you become imbued with strong opinions and strong views about how to live a better life or something like that. Because you don't go along with desire itself. You see the essence of desire in all its manifestations. There's coarse desires, like we'll just say the hedonic pleasures of sex, drugs, and rock and roll. But then there are more and more subtle defilements, like of being a spiritual leader and having we'll just say control over a large group of people. So released from speculative views, the wise person, free of self-reproach, is not tainted by the world. So again, the Buddha is pointing past these, what he calls speculative views. So the difference between right view and speculative views is that right view sees the world the way it is. Speculative views is, again, just an opinion. It's not based on genuine insight or wisdom or knowledge. It's just an opinion. It's just a fabrication. And whereas, like I said, that right view is seeing that the world is suffering in nature, and seeing that it is arising because of our grasping, our tanha. So released from speculative views, the wise person, free of self-reproach, is not tainted by the world. So again, this quality of self-reproach can manifest as kinds of shame. So one could could be avoidant as well. One could be, like if we look at the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, where on the one hand, the Buddha encourages people to not be indulgent. On the other hand, he also says don't be punishing yourself with kind of painful ascetic practices. So this would be, in this sense, a kind of a self-reproaching kind of quality. And it's not tainted by the world, meaning that you mind your own business again, where you see the world as being something external to you, something that you don't have influence over. You know what your boundaries are. The only thing you can change is your own heart, and the world is going to fare according to its own karma. He is remote from all phenomena, from whatever is seen, heard, or sensed. With his burden dropped, released, the Muni, not given to mental construction, does not desire, does not yearn, so said the Blessed One. So then this is a kind of a poetic end to this whole sutta. He is remote from all phenomena, meaning he's not really touched by it emotionally or spiritually. I mean, intellectually he can see it. He's looking at it with that equanimity. He sees, he hears, he senses, he experiences the world as normal, but he's not touched by it, meaning he's not swayed or he's not overwhelmed. He doesn't experience the world as suffering anymore, meaning he has pain, but he doesn't make the pain into suffering. He has difficulty, but he doesn't make the difficulty into suffering anymore. With his burden dropped, released, the Muni, not given to mental construction. So again, pointing back constantly to the mental construction. So we can have difficulties as wise people or as enlightened people, but we don't make mental constructions or fabrications around that difficulty. We're having a good time, a good easy life, but we don't again fabricate around that, meaning tell ourselves stories like I'm special or something like that. It's just good karma arising and passing away. So the Muni is not given to this kind of fabrication of the mind. The Muni is peaceful, does not desire, does not yearn. So again, yeah, these are like words around this kind of peaceful quality of mind. So again, the conclusion being here, so said the Blessed One. And he's saying this from his own direct experience. He's not a philosopher making up stories about this. He is somebody who is truthfully telling the surrounding audience of devas what it's like to be a genuinely liberated person, a person free from suffering, and a truly wise kind of person. Because the devas themselves were in many ways free from, or they are free from, difficulties, or the difficulties that other beings in other realms will have to suffer. They live a very refined experience. So for them, their standard is extremely high. And here the Buddha has to present to them what it's really like to be, what is genuine attainment or freedom from suffering. And he is answering this to his own replica, the replica he's made of himself, speaking to that audience and speaking to that to try and give them a future or a life beyond their present life that would be a good life, the life of a Muni, as he calls it. Okay, but I'll be happy to hear what my fellow Sangha have to say about this.
So to give the background, I will just to understand what Venerable mentioned, background will be interesting. They are the Buddha Gautama is, no, Buddha, the replica. He's asking from Buddha Gautama, there are people, they are with views, that particular view, they are grasping them, and this is the truth. And whatever the others are, useless. So these are the people we call learned people, and they are hating the other people, giving other alternative views, and look down. He's asking, is it a praiseworthy quality or not praiseworthy quality? Someone is having a well-established view and he don't like to discuss with others and look down. Is it, will he get, with the, in long term, will that kind of holders of the view will get the credit of or thanks, or will he be banished in time to come? That means they are good people. They are having a view. And commentators, they say, this is what the whole Deva world is. They are with their own view. And they are better off. They have food, they have lodgings, they have costumes, and they have medicine, and they are better off. So they are bound to hold or steadfast with the view. And therefore, they never listen to the Buddha. They never listen, never come to the discussion like this, because they are better off. They are above the sky, above the clouds. So therefore, the Buddha is telling this truth for the good people, those who are blind to become better. And therefore, answer is very lengthy. Answer is very gradual. You have already achieved. You are above average. You are good people. But it is bonding you and crucifying you, fixating you. You are ignorant to the how to refine, how to get the better. And you have a turtle-like, case-hardening situation. So therefore, the Buddha is gradually talking about not in the curative way, not in the therapeutic way, he has to come back to the preventative way. So this is what happened to the present day first world countries. First world, that is a new world order. They're talking nonsense. Africans and Asiatic people, they don't have nothing to eat. They are making golden rules and think how to run the world. No one is there to teach them. They never open this kind of books. They open the Bible, which is written according to their own wish. They are opening the laws, rules. That's their own production. And they are opening the bank accounts, their own production. Their own justification, their own press. No one needs to teach. So the Buddha considered this one of his prime duties to stir these people and to teach them in not in an irritating way, but in a very philosophical way. And they are, that is why he has to develop a replica Buddha and asking questions. And these questions are not the question of the breadwinners. Their question is something different. They are the utter basic needs. But these people are already good. But that goodness never leads to liberation. Never. They are in a trap. And then I am going to the last, this thing that Venerable was talking. Na brahmano kapa mupechi sabbang. Na brahmano kapa mupeti sangkang na ditti sari na vijnana bandhu. Nyatva cha so sammatiyo putuja upekhati ugannanti manye. The Buddha is giving the really liberated person. Brahmano means he is no more in the putujana world, he is liberated. He never go to desire or view grasping, nothing, because he is liberated, because there is no person as such. Instead of Buddha said, there is a person, he is liberated, emancipated, he don't have desire, he don't have misunderstanding, wrong views. He is not telling, this is my view. That's no person. There's no person to tell the ditti. Samapatti jnanadikala, he is not happy bragging about I have clairvoyance, I have non-local behavior and kind of, because the commentator says they are not bragging about this superhuman power. But he is not bragging about his own achievement also, that's no person. That's, there's no ego. There's no there. So that is the point. You can't comprehend properly is Advaita Vedanta. Advaita Vedanta is talking about the getting rid of the extremes. But kind of a catch, kind of a desire to the middle. Because in order to get rid of the extremes, further stints, he has to come. And Advaita means not the duality there, but Advaita he grasps. And intellectually this is, this Advaita, this intermediate or middle path, has two representations. One thing is with qualities you can recognize, the other one is no qualities, no, not depending on anything, there is no attribution, unmanifested. So they try to compare this unmanifested, undependent, kind is the supreme. And they say it's a soul, it's a Brahma. And the Buddha says there's no soul as such, no Brahma, no Paramatma, no Jivatma. So that part still not sorted out. And this book is giving that, depicting the situation. He says, whatever the jnana, got the supreme jnana, he never claim it. He disclaim it. Disavow, because no ego. There's no self. There's nothing to say, this is the only truth, you are wrong. And Napi Dittisari is not searching and going according to the my pet ideas and desires and views, and not bragging and claiming, I achieve this and that. Nyatva cha so sammutiyo putu jana. Knowing all the rest of the world is run by wrong views, and they are always with confidential and private. All the other individuals have something personal, something confidential, and private and confidential. But this particular person, there is no person as such. He never claimed my view as view. He never claimed my knowledge as knowledge, because there is no ego. So that is going beyond the logistics, logics and grammar. So whenever other people grasp in their own views, grasp in their own belongings, he can fairly understand it. Not telling it is appreciating it. Can understand why people, they have to have, otherwise they can't run this the fabrication, self-centered idea. They can't run without that kind of accumulation of defilements. They claim this is me, this is the crux, this is who I am that. But I understand, person with understanding, they never clash with them. They understand because he claim, because he is having his own dirty, his own defilement, his own view, his own desire, and he take this as the crux. He depend upon that, and that defile also depending upon him. So that duality is there. He is very intermediate, upekkha. But others take their own view, and they are fighting, martyrdom, killing each other for the view. So these kind of things not easy to communicate. That's a long story, and therefore question is quite appear to be artificial from the commoner's point of view. Only a Buddha can ask this question. Only a Buddha can give an answer, but still not a short answer. That is the difference, how to be good and how to be better. Ujucha, sujucha, not only the direct, but it is perfectly direct. Ujucha, sujucha is called good and the better. Worst kind of lot in the world is the good people. They never think about better because they think they have achieved. Other people do not have even the basic needs. And therefore, they are looked down and kind of... So now Buddha take special turn and tell them, darling, you are good. You are a heavenly being. You are above average, knowledge. Everything is there. But your rut, your cleavage, your cling, very difficult. That depends on faith. Utterly faith. No knowledge. Because these good people have a lot of knowledge. But they are not listening to Buddha. So the Buddha is creating a duplicate Buddha, and Buddha is asking. Answer is lengthy, so therefore not a single Buddhist reading this book. Non-Buddhists, they think this is the best teaching of the Buddha. Which other religion, they don't talk these kind of issues. But they wanted to protect the creator God. They want to protect the intelligent design. And they are talking about the world order, new world order. In order to protect their foolishness idea, and they are on egotistic run, and the whole third world countries blindly follow in these idiots. So I am looking at the world, of course, while practicing, being a monk. This is the blind people are leading, and how blindly, within being Buddhist, we are driven by these idiots. By education, by law, by money, by media, pharmaceutical industries. All are detrimental. 6 detrimental trends by Neil Ferguson, but he also a detrimental person, different issue. But give me so much of a... so much of a view, it appear like hateful, it appear like negative. Not that I am hating them, but this is the way. The Buddha took this mission, how to teach good people. Very difficult. The mindfulness I can teach any person other than Buddhist. Non-religious people, cancer patient, addicted people, abused people, and terminal person I can teach. But the worst lot is the Buddhists, because they think they know. So I am looking at them, telling I am a Buddhist, I have 70% Buddhist population in Sri Lanka, so I am not representing them, I am not leading them. I say that 30% I am taking my time. Very successful. Very successful. So this is my view, I would say. About this no-view situation, and present day, each and every news, each and every discussion is pushing me to look into a different arena. Yesterday I discussed with Venerable Buddharakkita about how a news become entertainment, entertainment go to the hate-tainment.
Anger.
Anger? Anger-tainment. Sorry, I am very sorry, but I just mentioned in the last discussion also, how anger, so people call anger as knowledge. Today, whole knowledge is nothing but anger. That's why you have the ancestral guilt, because you have eaten the fruit of knowledge. Then what happened? The sex arose. And the moral shame and the moral fear arose. You are deprived of the heaven, or the, how do you call, garden? God of Eden, deprived. So Thomas Merton says, just be honest. Just be innocent, then you are back at the garden. It happened only in here, now, I am situation. Never in pluralistic manner. Never you can project to the future or the past. And never you can take this from geological point to the next point. So therefore we have to understand that the truth is lying in the here, now I am. But now we are discussion. We are in the written books. This all camouflage. The truth is being blunt. Never mind. Knowing that, still we can discuss. That's all I have to contribute at this moment. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Swami Nansa and Bhante. And so you've already said it all, I think, but I just will give my own take on what I've heard and see if I can understand what's being said and the important parts. When I am hearing about the devas, I think that it sounds like they've reached a certain spiritual attainment or level of on their path, but they're blocked now because they're grasping to that attainment. Is that true? They're Swaminansa.
Sometimes it's
they're
rupa.
just
in a good way. They're in a good place.
They're just in a good place.
No, rupa jhana. When you are getting rupa jhana, that means you are suppressed the nivaranas. You go to the Brahma realm. That's also called celestial. And deva, they are not with the jhanic listing, but normal worldly good deeds. As a result, they get the interest. They are depending on the interest now. I mean, the fixed deposits, they have put a huge money, and they are just depending on the interest.
Okay, so they're just normal people, regular kind of, maybe like kings or...
Usually, king is known as Deva. In Sri Lankan and the Buddhist, they have advanced. They are called conventional gods, Sammuti Deva. The other one is by birth, due to their past karma. All American presidents, British president, kings, queen, they consider themselves as Deva. That utter idiotness introduced by George Bush. Earlier it was a secular. Your constitution was secular. But what the George Bush did? He put Christianity, then World Vision and everything gave him a full credit that he will be the everlasting president. And he started interpreting exactly the queen, exactly all the gods, nothing but Deva, Sammuti Deva. So Buddha accepted this in his theory.
But the devas are very difficult to change their view because they feel they're higher than everybody else. All the common people, they've got the most supreme position in the world, and very difficult. And they're very intelligent. They've been educated well. They're difficult to change their view that they have the best. View. And the Buddha is trying to say, that's good, you've reached a high level of skill and knowledge, but you're still grasping, which is clinging. And so you're stuck in your place. You cannot go any further than that until you go beyond this clinging to views. Something and on. The thing that we see, and as Swaminansa, you were saying, people that are spiritual or that claim to be spiritual or Buddhists are very difficult to teach the basic, basics of mindfulness to bear attention. What I take from that is that people that are on a spiritual path have not yet shed greed, hate, and delusion. They're still clinging to a self, and so they think that they're in a great position and that they have a sort of arrogance that I know I'm on the Buddha's path. And they, what that reminds me of is this term that we probably all heard is spiritual materialism, that we going on the spiritual path, we think we've given up a lot of worldly possessions and family and so forth, but we replace our materialism for spiritual beliefs. So we're still creating views that are holding us with from going beyond to freedom from these views and clinging. So these are the thoughts that I had.
Theravan Saranai Mahasangha and everyone else, thank you, Mahasangha, for all the wonderful comments so far. First thing that I wanted to mention is going off of Bhante's comments here just a second ago. I think there are several times in the suttas where the Buddha actually talks about how, you know, there is this need to not be, or there's this need to not become conceited when one is on the path towards liberation, towards awakening. I was speaking to the other American monk who was visiting, Bhante Dhammasumita, and I think he was referring to the simile of the raft, where I think the Buddha is talking about using the Dhamma as a means to get to liberation, but you're not carrying the raft on the on your back, if I'm not mistaken. That's how the sutta goes. So you're not, you know, from what Bhante was from what I remember him telling me, was that you're not, it's like related to, for one, like, I think he was talking about getting into arguments over the Dhamma. Like, oh, this is, you know, my viewpoint about the Dhamma. This is how you're supposed to practice, or this is how you're supposed to practice, or you're supposed to do this meditation topic or this meditation topic. No, this is right. This is right. This is wrong. This is wrong. And getting into these debates over the Dhamma. So, yeah, you know, so the Buddha, from what I know several times in the suttas, is referring to this need to not become conceited on the path when there is still work to be done, you know, on your own mind. You know, can definitely come up amongst Dhamma practitioners, this conceit that, you know, I know all about the Dhamma and all these other people, they don't know how to practice correctly. So you can see how personality view, Sakkaya Ditti, really takes hold even there among Dhamma practitioners. It can really take hold. Like, I know that this is the correct way to practice, and what do you know? You don't know anything. So, yeah, Sakkaya Ditti is quite a powerful thing. Personality view is quite a powerful thing, as we can see even with, you know, even among Dhamma practitioners, you know, I would say that you can see this Sakkaya Ditti taking hold, where they, maybe one or some of them think that they know everything and that everyone else on this path doesn't know anything. I know how to practice correctly, you don't. So, it's very good to be mindful of that Sakkaya Ditti. So another thing is that, you know, a lot of people, you know, when, again, you know, when we're talking about personality view, Sakkaya Ditti, a lot of people, when they're presented, perhaps I've mentioned this before, when they are presented with an opposing viewpoint, it's almost as if it's an attack on their personality. So I have constructed this idea, I am this race, this gender, this religion, this political affiliation, whatever it is. I'm a part of, you know, this socioeconomic class or status. And when I'm presented with an opposing viewpoint, it's an attack on my personality. So, you know, they feel personally hurt or insulted by this opposing viewpoint being presented. So, whereas by studying the suttas, one could assume that someone who is entirely liberated from suffering would not feel personally hurt, attacked, offended, or insulted by someone who presents an opposing viewpoint. You know, they're not necessarily going to agree per se, I would say, but they're not going to feel personally hurt or insulted or offended by this opposing viewpoint being presented. It's just going to be like, you know, they're saying their viewpoint, you know, that's all. It's not, I don't feel the need to respond to this person per se, or, you know, say anything to this person. I know that this person, you know, perhaps they will have this understanding of, you know, maybe this, you know, perhaps it's an understanding of, you know, this person, maybe they're just not wise enough to understand the truth. There's no need for me to engage in debate or argument with this person. So by studying the suttas, I think that we could assume that one who is completely liberated from suffering would not feel personally insulted or offended by someone presenting an opposing viewpoint. Whereas, you know, a patujana, a commoner, an uninstructed worldling, you know, would feel insulted or offended by someone presenting an opposing viewpoint to theirs. Because, again, you know, a patujana, a commoner, has constructed this personality view, this they have this Sakaya Ditti, and they've constructed this personality around, you know, it's going to be several things, their race, their gender, their religion, their socioeconomic status, etc. A lot of people, you know, they have wrong view, in the sense that they believe that sensual pleasures are the way to happiness and ending their suffering in life. So they consistently pursue sensual pleasures. That is the goal, essentially, that is their goal in life. Whether they realize it or not, you know, their goal is to pursue sensual pleasures because they have this idea that this is going to end my suffering in life. This is going to put an end to my unhappiness in life. This will put an end to my unhappiness in life. If I get that new car, or I get that you know, new house, or I get this you know, new wife or this new husband, if I get you know, a new job with more money, this will end my unhappiness. And so one could say that they have this deva ideal, a lot of people. You know, the devas, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but the devas, you know, they have a pretty much a good life without difficulties, you know, in the sense that they don't have, like really miserable problems in their life. And I think that a lot of people have this idea that, you know, I want that. I want that for myself. I want all these sensual pleasures. I want this easy life where I don't have to have these problems and this misery. But they don't, you know, most people don't understand that all conditioned things are nicca, dukkha, and anatta, impermanent, unsatisfactory, and not self. So as a result of this, they fail to realize that no matter what they get, they will lose it eventually. So that new car, that new house, that new wife or husband, that new job with more money, you know. And so they fail to realize, most people, that, again, all conditioned things are anicca, dukkha, and anatta, impermanent, unsatisfactory, and not self. So they fail to realize that they will lose these things eventually. And a lot of times, even in the pursuit of these sensual pleasures, in the pursuit of this, you know, new job with more money, in pursuit of this new car that's fancier or nicer, or maybe has new gadgets that the old one didn't have, most people, you could say, fail to realize that there will be inevitable problems and issues that come along with acquiring these possessions. So, you know, sometimes they might get a new job with more money, but it's more stressful than their old job. They may have more things to do. And so this is the story that our mind, or that the mind tells us a lot of times, is if I just get this, then I'll be happy. If I just get that, I'll be happy. Then I'll have less problems. Then I won't have to worry. If I just get this or I get that. But as we can see, you know, oftentimes once we get what we want, a lot of times even, or at least sometimes, we actually have more problems because of what we got. So maybe I want this new job with more money, but as a result of getting that new job with more money, now I have more stress. I'm sure that happens to people sometimes. Maybe they're continuously pursuing a new job because they had an old job in the past that they really liked and they lost it. And now they're consistently pursuing this old job. They want a replica of this old job. So they're consistently pursuing these new jobs that they don't like. And they're chasing after this idea of getting something like their old job back. And they're just, getting one job after the next job after the next job, just hoping that I will get something like that old job again. So you can see the delusion, you could say, associated with that. If I keep shuffling through jobs, I will finally get something that is close to my old job or good like my old job. So those are the comments that I have for the moment. Thank you again, Mahasangha.
I thought of adding one remark listening to you two, that Buddha was born lucky. He was a born Deva. And then he renounced. So he knows how to talk to Deva. If we go there, they will never take care about us because we are very lowly people. We are not Deva, but he was born. He relinquished. He was going against the grain. He was a silent revolutionist. And then he achieved higher than what he got, the birthright. Now he can talk to the kings, he can talk to the Devas, but they are very tiny percentage in the population. His basic talk with the just man from the street, just citizen John, just Putujana. But these people are the manipulators. They are the rulers. They are the monitors. I mean manipulators. So if they are not changed, all the other rest of the world suffering. They can't think. The Buddha was born lucky, a prince, and renounced, and go higher level, then he can do. So which one is the priority for Buddha's viewpoint? The superior elite group, which is the rut, the unrepairably damaged, permanent head damage, PhD, or the commoners, 99%. Suttas are basically 99% for the commoners. But these people are the decision makers, worse lot. That day also, today also. And whole world think they are with the supreme power. They are with the intelligent design. They are with the 5-year plans. What happened? With the old intelligent 5-year plans, 10-year plans in Sri Lanka, we have run 70 years independently collapsing. Country is collapsing. They are making good, very economically sound and double degree brains making proposals. Even if I am read the paper, it's no mistakes, utter failure. I am not hating them. I am not cursing them. This knowledge is the worst thing. Technology is the worst thing. Science is the worst thing. Jack up the people egotistic idea. They are not human now. All robotic. They are depending on Elon Musk. They're the idiots. And Donald Trump. He do not know whether he is living or not. He do not know whether his country is a democratic or not. Because that they are groomed to be callous. Prince Siddhartha also the same. But imagine he quit the place. When I talk, and when I taking conference to the drug addicts, I have so much of an idea how I became escaped from drugs.
I have a lot of friends and I have experimented with. I have never taken into. It is not due to the good of my teachers or the parents. Something inborn. Not that I am exposed to. But how lucky I am. But if I am go to the addicted people and pleading or the drug dealers, cartels, the drug dealers.
Cartel.
I don't know. What's the meaning of?
Cartel.
What is the, how, what?
It's like a gang.
Huh? Gangsters.
A gang.
Yeah. So I was in that kind of a team. But I was never taken to that. So am I qualified to talk to the cartels or the drug addicts and the drug people? No. So I am imposing myself, thinking how I am lucky. It is not my intelligence, it is not my this thing, but it is because something born with. Not only me, even the Richard Davidson says, the simple idea of mindfulness, why people are not accepting? Which it do not appear like intelligent. It's so common. So people are seeking complicated long formulas, each and everything is hellward, leading to hell. So each time when I am going somewhere, some people giving me so much of the policy papers and concept papers, perfect, about the drug situation, about the environmental situation, about the universal village, about the rehabilitation, the perfect. They won't work. Never. But when I take it and read it to someone, they think I am intelligent because I am reading such a intelligent papers. But never work. Because my thing is working because I am here and now. Intelligent. I am in the present moment intelligence. And that is what the beauty of the Buddha. He is from the heavenly family, kingsley and princely family. But he quit it and came above the Prince Siddhartha, King Suddhodana, and he was born royal family, Kshatriya. But he went above Brahmana families. Because at that time, Brahmana was the highest. And Buddha was using all the terminology. So therefore, Vivekananda says, what the Buddha is telling is exactly what our dharma. But he achieved. Therefore, I salute him only to the Buddha, not to the disciple, not to the Dhamma, not to the Sangha, because that is available in us. I am not qualified, I am not capacitated myself because I have not practiced. I respect Buddha, but don't teach me Dhamma, because I know. That's exactly what happened to the Buddhists. That's one single comment is the Buddha was born lucky. That's what my comment.
Wasarai Swaminasa, thank you for the wonderful comments there. One thing I wanted to, I guess, another thing I wanted to mention was, I distinctly remember, I think it was not long before I left home to get ordained, I had a friend, and I guess we were having a conversation, and from what I remember, he said something like, oh, you know, the Buddha, you know, easy for him to say, like, you know, talking about his, I think he was talking about his, you know, going off, leaving, you know, the household life behind, sensual pleasures behind, to go and search for enlightenment, for liberation. And I think this friend of mine, from what I remember, he was like saying like, oh, you know, easy for him to say, easy for him to do, like he had all that stuff, like all the, you know, all these, like, you know, referring to like sensual pleasures, easy for him to just like go off and like search for enlightenment, something to that effect. You know, this is, perhaps you could say the comparing mind, you know, which is also, one could say, a trait or an aspect of Sakaya Ditti personality view.
They say the personality traits.
Is there this is personality view.
Or directed dispositions.
Right.
They're born with it.
Comparing mind, personality view. It's a trait of Sakaya Ditti or an aspect of Sakaya Ditti personality view, where it's like, oh, you know, and you see this in the world a lot. You know, a lot of people, they'll say, oh, look at this 1% or, you know, this group of people who have everything. Well, these people are like, I guess they say that they're bad people, more or less, because they have all these things. And they don't understand that these people have problems too. Simply, they don't understand that these people have problems too. And just simply because they have more wealth and more things does not mean that they do not have problems. I mean, look at the devas again. The devas, you know, they have an easy life. One could say like CEOs or kings or, you know, ministers of state. And, you know, they don't have problems. They just have like, you know, an easy kind of life where they don't have to worry about pretty much any misery or real serious problems. But, you know, they don't understand, again, that all of these things are anicca, dukkha, and anatta, impermanent, unsatisfactory, and not self. So even all of these people who are the wealthy and living luxurious lives, they'll lose it all eventually, for one. And for two, they have problems too, just based on these possessions that they have. You know, stress, anxiety. They could like lose their support among the public for just saying something that people don't like. You know, they could say something, then everybody on Facebook or Instagram is like, "Oh, you're canceled." You know, like we don't like you because you said that. And so people don't understand like that these people who have wealth and who have luxury and live luxurious lives or easy lives, similar to devas, you know, easy lives in the worldly sense, similar to devas. These people have problems too, based on their possessions and their attachments. And so this whole thing about coming back to what my friend was talking about, you know, this comparing, oh, you know, he's like talking about the Buddha, oh, easy. From what I remember, he was talking about the Buddha and how, quote unquote, easy it is for him to go off and search for enlightenment after he's had all these sensual pleasures already. You know, a question you could ask that person is, and not that you want to confront them or anything, but a wise, humorous, I guess, question you could ask them is, have you not ever had like sensual pleasures or more than someone else? Have you not ever been more fortunate than someone else materially? Have you not ever, and this is a question, I guess, for anyone listening to this discussion to ponder on, is have you, can you think of a time where you've actually had more than someone else, like more material things than someone else? I'm sure that most of us, if not all of us here, can think of at least one time in our lives when we have had more things materially than someone else. And so if we can experience the problems and know about the attachments that come with those things, then of course the Buddha could too. Of course these wealthy people in the world can too. They clearly they can have the same problems, or maybe not the same, but problems just like us.
Exactly the same.
Problems just like us.
Exactly.
Based
the same.
Based on the fact that they have these attachments and material possessions. So, thank you. That's the comment I wanted to say. Sorry.
Say one thing. Sorry, that you were referring to is all, and also as the Buddha set out on his path when he saw that there was sickness, old age, and death, and that all beings have to. So he saw the two extremes of how he could see how you could have everything, but he could see that you're going to lose it all as well.
Right, exactly. So one thing I confronted very recently is extremely opposite. He's an addicted person. Tattoos in whole body, prime age, very beautiful person, born Buddhist. And he found useless, and whenever he go to the Buddhist place, he was desperate. And later he became a monk, and now we are facing with an interview. So then everyone is listening, because it's just so dramatic. And he says, if you give me a drug, still I can use it. But I need no, because I am so free. So then I compared with my renunciation as his renunciation. So mine is not so dramatic. Because I was
for me. But he made a picture very young. And he's not talking about the high top class philosophy. But he renounced and make a picture. So then I was thinking the Buddha born lucky and he went without provocation of anyone. And he set the prime example. And myself also fairly good. And it happened me to have a long journey to quit it. But that particular person, having cars and all the kinds of the shops and everything, he gave everything to someone and came and renounced. So the person asking, said this question, statement, telling Buddha, is it easy to do Buddha? But that particular person I am referring is not so easy. It's an utter coincidence. Utter coincidence happening. So when I go to Kaduvel, I meet so much of that kind of people. But Nissanamani, we have very traditional people. But still I feel I am lucky. Still I feel, even though I am not undergone such a mill, my renunciation is not second to the Buddha, not second to that particular person. So renunciation is renunciation. That's enough time. Now we have to go to Pindapatha.
Okay.
Yeah, next time you can start.
Okay, thank you, Bhante.
Sukhi hontu.